Welcome to Disruptive CEO Nation, where company founders, entrepreneurs, and cutting-edge thinkers drop in from around the globe to share startup stories, insider insights, and hard-earned success lessons. Now, here's your host, a woman who mastered business by placing heels on the ground all over the world, having worked with and coached CEOs and senior leaders from over 90 countries, and who wants you to build your best business future, Allison K. Summers.
Hi, everyone. Are you ready to talk about coffee? Today, we are not only going to talk about coffee, but we are going to talk about the intersectionality of business. It's such a global world that we are in. And we're going to talk about asset management and linking to opportunities. And we are speaking to a wonderful and innovative founder who's had just such an incredible journey. But I want you to hear the passion that he has around having built a business in Colombia. So welcome to the program, Cole Shepherd.
Thank you for having me, Allison. Pleasure to be here.
So, Cole, I kind of threw a whole lot out there. So let's start with you, because there's two pieces we're going to talk about today. One is the Green Coffee Company, and then we're also going to talk about Legacy Group. So let's start with the coffee part first and give our listeners an idea of what that business is.
Sure, absolutely. So I'm dialing in from Medellin, Colombia today. This is where we started what is now the largest coffee producer in Colombia. We started in 2017. Really, the goal at the beginning was actually an asset management product. We had commercial real estate investors who were looking to make higher yields than they could in buying shopping malls or buying multifamily housing. They were comfortable with Colombia and they wanted something in agriculture. And so the original thesis was to consolidate coffee farms, consolidate infrastructure, sell further down the value chain. And we really got cranking, I would say, about 2 years in. We started hiring, you know, international management teams, start really getting connected with, I would say, sales teams in developed world. And since 2020, we've raised about $70 million extra dollars, threw it into the business, and we've built what is now probably the most sophisticated vertically integrated coffee business from origin to all the way to roasted coffee from anywhere in this hemisphere.
I love that. And I love the fact about, you know, that you're matching this concept of assets and this concept clearly of capitalism. We want to make some money. We want to do some things, but also really building a more viable business channel for the locals in Colombia. I know you have a passion about global and international business, but why Colombia? How did you end up there?
Sure. So before I lived in Colombia, and I've lived here about, this is my 10th year actually in Colombia, I was living in Hong Kong. And so my background in Hong Kong was doing mergers and acquisitions, mostly in financial services. So my background was buying banks, insurance companies, asset managers. And obviously we do other deals throughout the world. I might be on some tech deals or let's say real estate deals somewhere when, you know, I wasn't buying, trying to advise I'm buying a bank, but really my background is financial services. I was with a point in my firm. I used to work for PricewaterhouseCoopers, where you really got to start thinking about becoming a partner, what you want to do, what's your value proposition. And I really liked my time in developing markets. And so I was looking at, you know, moving within the firm to either two areas. One was Southeast Asia. We were looking at Philippines, Vietnam, and then Latin America. They're both areas where our team didn't really operate. And what happened was I was talking to partners in a lot of the countries and saying, you know, where did we need teams to be run? At the time, I was running teams for the firm. And I came down to Colombia. My brother actually got married in Cartagena and came down for the wedding, started doing my own diligence kind of on the market while I was talking to one of the partners in Bogota, which is the capital of Colombia. And I thought there was opportunity, actually, in more than what I was seeing with being within the firm. I saw kind of economic mismatches. The level of development really didn't like correlate to the level of banking penetration that you see. Like it was much more sophisticated than I was expecting. So I came back to Hong Kong and I was like, you know, I think I could start running businesses here, right? I think there might be something interesting, more capitalistic, more entrepreneurial I can go for. And maybe I should do it outside the firm. So actually within like 2 days of coming back to the firm after being in Colombia, I put in my notice and said, look, I want to start doing my own businesses in Colombia. It started with a real estate thesis and it kind of built up from there.
You, I know you're an intelligent man, and I know you're like
Yes.
these are incredible stories, but surely there were people around you going, wait, what?
Oh yeah. Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, the partner I used to work for, I used to get along with really great. He was a great guy. And I remember him telling me, he's like, what are you talking about? He's good. 'Cause Colombia isn't on anyone's radar. If you're in the business of buying banks from Hong Kong, Colombia doesn't come on the radar of a market that you're even reviewing at all. And it was growing pretty aggressively at the time. But yeah, I had a lot of peers that were saying, that sounds like a risky bet. Because what I really did is I liquidated all my retirement funds, all investment funds, all my cash I had. And then I just bet on myself. And at the time, I didn't speak Spanish. I
That
came
you didn't
down.
speak Spanish.
No. When I came down to Colombia, I grew up in North Carolina. So I got through, like Spanish too in high school. Maybe I got through Spanish three in university, but I got to my same Spanish level probably I had in university within like 2 weeks of taking full-time Spanish courses here in Colombia. So it's pretty pathetic, like when I first came with my Spanish, but over 10 years you become quite good at it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I want to isolate and talk specifically about building the coffee business and what it took. I have an understanding you have over 400 employees today. I know you're quite proud of where you've grown this. Tell us a little bit about this story, and I always like naked truths and hard lessons learned
Sure.
along the way.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it is a painful experience being an entrepreneur, I think, anywhere in the world. But in developing markets, it's you are playing against the country and culture and legal systems and regulatory regimes that you're not always familiar with. I'm not going to say it's more difficult, but it's quite difficult. So when we started, the original play was really we started with about a 600-acre grouping of farm acquisitions. And really we were looking at it like a real estate play, typical of what you would see on an asset manager play, right? And say, look, we can buy farms at discount, we can bring in better technology for infrastructure, and then we sell it as far down the value chain as we can get with sophisticated international teams. Just the ability to sell coffee outside of a town square and having international connections, obviously you can make premiums on that. But really, when we got into it, I'll tell you, the first 2 years are probably the most painful, right? Take control of farms, build out the initial teams, and you're working with far less capital. Our initial capital raise was a little under $6 million, which really is not a lot of capital to start building a company.
I was going
And
to
so
say
you're,
to invest in real estate and the equipment and technology.
oh
Yeah,
yeah.
that.
It's very light. Now, $6 million goes a lot further in Colombia than it would if we were buying, townhouses in Manhattan. But, it is not a lot of capital. And when we started, we said, okay, well, let's get this to yield out. Let's get something that's interesting for the investors. And about 2 years in, we realized, there's so many fragments in the market, and there's such a lack of other both human capital and, let's say, money capital in the Colombian coffee system, both in Colombia, and I would say globally at origin, we saw an opportunity to really scale up. So I think that's kind of 2 years in, you're taking a beating, getting kicked in the face every day, but things start to work, right? The teams start to work. You're producing coffee, you're selling coffee. And then you start to, because you're in it, I mean, you're in it 100 hours a week, and you see what's going on. You start interacting with other farmers, people who are in the market, the larger players. And you realize, things aren't as sophisticated as you expect them to be. And you see not easy wins, but things that you can better about the industry, about your business, about where the industry and the market needs to go in a logical fashion. And that's when we really decided about 2020. The first thing we needed was international management teams. We got a new CEO, we got a CFO, we got a COO that are all experts. All of them are still with us today as we keep building out the teams. And every year we add a couple more, I would say, senior leaders to the team to keep rounding everything out. But I would say that was by far the most important thing about the business, especially here in Colombia, was by far is human capital. Without the human capital, without our team, we wouldn't be able to do anything of what I'm talking about today. There would be no achievement. It didn't matter if I deployed $1 billion. Really, the thing that brings you to the next level is talent that can operate within both a developing world and a developed world, which you'll find is very, very, very scarce. So the ability to attract the best and the brightest and people who have that say subject matter expertise in coffee or trading, it's quite challenging in developing markets, right? It's not like, you know, you have a GM role in Dallas and you say, look, I need to fill out this GM role. You have 300 people that could fit the role and they all theoretically could do it. And they probably might all do a great job in Medellin, or even if I did pull from Bogota or other large cities in Colombia, you're quite limited. So our focus on human capital was massively important. And I wouldn't say, you know, after 2 years, I stopped getting kicked in the face. I still get kicked in the face pretty much every day with one thing or another.
Well, I got to ask is, again, when we talk about doing businesses in developing nations, were people, you know, this was a lot of change buying these farms and changing the way that things operate.
Yes.
Were the locals a little... you know, were they excited at the opportunities? Were they, you know, a little challenged in this wave of change that you were bringing in? Or,
sure.
You know, give us a little idea about that.
Absolutely. I would say it's both. You know, you'd always have, even if you, let's say, go to farming communities in the United States, gossip is king, right? So you'll have a mixture of gossip and you'll have a mixture of people being excited, because there is, like, for the first town that we bought farms in and put large capital investments in infrastructure is a town called Salgar in Colombia. You know, that is a town of 10,000 people. They've never had foreign investment before, right? There's people that have never seen someone speak English before, right? It's only Spanish. I mean, these are very small towns. We call them pueblos in Colombia. So you'll get rumors about you. Like, for instance, we used to have a rumor that, you know, we'll say gringos are coming in buying farms, and they thought that we were drilling a gold mine, actually, in the coffee farms, because we bought so much coffee farms to begin with. They figured that we weren't going to do coffee because there's no way anyone would buy this much. This is the first acquisition, right? We are, you know, over 10 times the size of that first round today. And the first rumor that came out about us was, yeah, they must have found gold on one of these farms, so they must be drilling for gold, which obviously is not true. But then again, you'd have, you know, we do formal employment in the regions, you know, which really doesn't exist in agriculture, you know, payment of pensions, payment of social security, payment of healthcare, you know, everything is informal actually in agriculture in Colombia. So I would say we're in the top 1% in that realm of all agricultural companies in Colombia. And that provides people with opportunity, you know, the opportunity to grow, the opportunity to have careers, the opportunity for educational advancement in their career, which they don't have in other places. So when people get to know us, I think they get very, very excited. When people don't know who we are, they like rumors and silly things, but it's all part of the game.
So let's talk about one of the big things in agriculture, and a lot of the companies I talk through who are in the food space is traceability of the product and
yes.
sustainability in the operations. Can you tell us a little bit of your position or some of the things that you have going on in that area?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that for coffee, I would say it might be more important in coffee than almost any other product. Both those are key. If you're not involved in that, you won't be in the coffee business, I would say, in 10 years. So a huge focus of us, let's just use the first one as an example, is traceability. You know, there is no coffee company in the world right now that says owns a brand, they have a roasted brand, United States, Europe, Australia, Japan, anywhere, that can tell you exactly where their coffee comes if they sell at scale. There can be small, especially roasters that say, I get it specifically from this farm, but they can't do it at scale. We can. And I'm gonna tell you why. And this is a huge thesis for our business because it's a hugely important aspect for the end buyer, the end consumer. They want to know where agricultural products come from, and they want to know you're doing things the right way, and they want it to be transparent. So that transparency we've built into the DNA of the business since day one. It is one of the most important things we do. And we, without being vertically integrated from origin, you wouldn't be able to do it. And so one way to be transparent is obviously we own and operate our own farms, but that has a limitation, right? So we have over 10,000 acres of land today. So this year we'll do between trading coffee and our own proprietary production, we'll do over 20 million pounds of green coffee. In the scheme of, it sounds like a lot, but in the scheme of coffee, coffee is massive industry. It's a small drop. But another aspect of our business is creating what we call farming nexuses. So we create infrastructure with the overcapacity for our proprietary farms, meaning that we can buy cherries and buy product from other small farmers around us, and we can geolocate those farms, right? So we know exactly where the farms are, how who they are, who they buy from. We can offer premiums versus other buyers because we can create a portfolio of unique coffees, throw them through our distribution channels or premiums. And then what we really want is to focus on byproducts with that. The buying of cherry allows us not only to create great green coffees and roasted coffees, but a core focus of our business is on circular economy relating to use of byproducts. For viewers who don't know, coffee comes in a red cherry. You only drink the seed. 60% of the weight is a cherry that typically is everywhere in the world is typically thrown out. So a huge focus of our business is on the R&D component of what's the best use of this byproduct and create commercialized products or resources that we can use in the business to better our system every day. But Allison, you're 100% right. Like you have to do those two pillars, or I mean, guys like me will try to take your business for sure.
Now, thank you for sharing that. I think we don't think, that you think like shelf to, bean to shelf to cup, but you don't think about how the bean got to the shelf as
That's
much. And
correct.
like you said, the consumer is getting more and more across all industry segments savvy about
Yes.
how they purchase. And
That's right.
eventually, to the point of if they can figure out the traceability, they'll just get on Google and go do a Google Sky over your farm and see what you have planted.
100%. The world is more transparent every day. Every day, the world is more transparent. And you're going to see regulations force it to be more transparent. All areas of supply chains, especially food and agricultural supply chains, are going to have to get more transparent. And there's going to be a push with regulators. There's going to be a pull with big established players. And we're going to see where you get to. But in the end result, you're going to have to be more traceable. You're going to have to be more sustainable because every end client in the world in the food space wants that.
Yeah. What is next for Legacy Group? I always like to say, just looking 2 or 3 years out,
Sure.
is it continuing to grow green coffee? Is it to expand footprints in other countries? Is it to touch into other areas of asset management? What's the kind of
Sure.
path that you have charted?
Sure. So I would say our focus in the next couple of years really will be to grow Green Coffee Company. That probably takes up 95% of our time. We only actually have one other portfolio company. I'm actually recording from it today. We're in one of our studios of another portfolio company called Polygonus. They do digital arts and entertainment here in Medellin. And they do an educational segment. So they actually make video games, full-length movie productions. You can do, full music design. They create video games around that. And they actually have an educational department that called the Academy that functions as teaching kids how to work in that industry. For viewers who don't know, Medellin is going to be one of the digital hotspots of the world, at least in the Latin American world. And the goal of the city actually is to become kind of a digital arts and entertainment epicenter. So similar to what you'd see in Los Angeles or Montreal. And so that probably takes up 5% of our time for us. We had an annual meeting in that company today. But really, I would say our focus in the next couple of years is really focuses on a lot of our time on green coffee, getting that to a position that we can take it public in a few years, and doing our best in advising these incredibly talented video game designers in Polygonus and do our best to get them to the next level as well.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I learned something new, and I'm sure our listeners will have learned something new. I want to talk on a very broad stroke, and it's really hard. Latin America is so big and diverse. I mean, you can't compare a country like Brazil to Chile. You really just
Right.
can't. But you still have some insights and intelligence about how things are developing across Latin America. So any places you would say, hey, business people, if you aren't watching some of the things in this country, maybe you should keep your eye on this.
Sure. I would say we always look at this thesis, my partner and I at Legacy, of what other countries will be most interested in. You know, Colombia is always at the top of our list. I would say on Spanish speaking, the other is Mexico. You know, Mexico is going to have a tremendous amount of trade flow going to it. There's capital constraints. There's a lot of challenges in Mexico, but you know, I'd say the capital markets are much more developed than a country like Colombia. They have a very educated workforce. There's this tremendous amount of potential as supply chains kind of move around and try to have them. That's especially American supply chains. And I think they have a tremendous amount of potential. I would say, you know, I'm looking at, is this kind of, it'll be longer down the road. What's happening in Argentina is somewhat interesting. You know, you have the first time I've ever seen a hardcore libertarian president come into power and going about as capitalistic as you could humanly go, facing a tremendous amount of resistance. I'm interested to see what happens. It's kind of a soap opera drama, but I'm not saying to throw money into Argentina at the moment, but I think it is worth seeing, you know, throwing, let's say, libertarian policies into a region that, you know, in the last few decades really has heavily swung to the left in a lot of the countries. And, you know, left in some of the Latin American countries is much more different than our left in America. You know, our left is a very small center left versus what you can see in places like Peru that is nearly at a communistic level, you know, in some of the political faces.
Yeah.
So I would say, yeah, I would say Mexico, Colombia, I'll always have an eye on Argentina. And then you have, you know, depending on the markets you're in, if you're in financial services, you know, places like Uruguay are very, very interesting. There's small little countries that have very open financial systems, small populations. But, you know, people like the president of Nubank, you know, they live in, Nubank is one of the largest digital banks in the world, headquartered in Brazil, by the way. And you have a little tech enclave going on in Uruguay, where people are keeping their families, they're running their businesses from Uruguay. So I think that's an also a very interesting market to take a look at. Some of the other ones are, you know, some of the Central American ones I think are quite small for most investors to take a look at, unless you have very niche businesses. So I would say on the macro level, Mexico, Colombia, take a look at Argentina. And I think Uruguay is something that I would take a look at for more sophisticated financial services, at least.
No, very nice. I really appreciate you sharing that level of insight. Hey, Cole, anything interesting that you are reading, listening to, recommending to other business leaders for inspiration or motivation these days?
Sure. I love to read the history of business leaders, basically. You know, I read a great one. It was about a guy named the Banana Man. It was before United Fruit. You know, you had a guy that was of Russian descent, moved down, built a banana company, which then became United Fruit. He got bought by United Fruit, but his history of his book was incredible. You know, but I'll constantly, my business partner loves all the biographies as well. So he'll send me, you know, the Titan, which is the history of Rockefeller. You know, we read the histories of a lot of the great robber barons in the US, read the histories of, you know, I would say the audiobooks and the reading of people who have been through the struggle of entrepreneurship, especially the classic entrepreneurship in developing market, I would say is more similar to like when America was a developing nation rather than it is today, which is much more developed, much more resource intensive. I love those. I love those when guys build businesses from zero.
And what is your kind of top advice that you give to other entrepreneurs, founders who are choosing a journey like yours?
I would say just keep with it and get ready to punch in the face. You know, I would say, you know, a lot of the opportunity is, you can say some of it's luck, some of it can be experience, some of it can be great decisions, but a lot of it I think is just perseverance. You know, the ability to come in with a happy face, keep your attitude positive, make smart decisions over time, keep your body healthy, keep your brain healthy, eat well, sleep well. You know, all the classic things that, you know, your doctor, your mom might tell you. You know, I think all those things are important. Try to keep as much balance as you can, which is literally like almost like an oxymoron when you're starting a
Yes,
business
it
from
is.
zero. It's literally impossible, but it is something that you have to like keep in the back of your head, like a crazy nagging sensation, is try to keep some semblance of balance. But it will get better. You know, this is my 10th year doing this, and every year it gets a little bit better, but it's still challenging. You know, every day you get kicked in the face in a new way, but it's just a different type of kick. So that's what I would say is the most important, is perseverance, and make sure you're doing something that you think is worth it, because you're going to pay for it in one way or another.
You know, Cole, we've been a little serious, and I want to ask you, what's one of the funniest or the most, like, it took you by surprise experience that you've had in this journey?
Oh man. I would say, I don't know if everyone will think
I
this
mean, the
is funny,
fact that you
but
were buying land to dig for gold, I think that's pretty amusing. But
oh, that one's great. I mean, we had a group of investors coming down, and we didn't have time to drive out to the farms that day. So we actually took helicopters out from Medellin to the farms. We have a soccer field next to one of our land holdings that we could land helicopters on. And it was a big investor tour. I mean, we had a lot of people out. I think we had 20 or 30 high net worth investors from the US that day. And so it was like 2 days straight of investor meetings, presentations, Q&A. And we were coming back, and it started raining in the middle. And so, you know, obviously in the coffee area in Colombia, you're in the mountains, right? We're in the Andes Mountains. You cannot land a helicopter just anywhere in the mountains. And when it rains and it starts storming in a helicopter, you get in trouble. So we were going to enter Medellin. Pilot says, nope, there's too much rain. Okay, try again. We'll try another path. Blah, 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 blah. Anyway, we had to emergency land a helicopter in on this soccer field attached to a hotel, like five towns out from Medellin. And the funny part isn't just having to emergency land a helicopter on a coffee or a field where kids are playing soccer. It was the CEO of the company was kind of live streaming it. He sent it to his wife. She was so furious seeing that he was riding in a helicopter in the rain. I don't think she talked to him for like a week, because he thought it was a good idea to live stream us moving around in a helicopter in pouring rain, because he didn't know that it's dangerous to ride in a helicopter in rain. And we heard about that story about how mad his wife was at him. Literally, I think it was, we still talk about it. So I'm assuming she's not over it completely. But a good learning experience to say, hey, don't fly helicopters in the rain.
don't fly helicopters in the rain. There you go. There's our departing life lesson for all of our listeners. Hey, Cole, if people want to connect with you, learn more, do more, what should they do?
Sure. So you could follow us on LinkedIn. We'd be the only legacy group operating out of Medellin, Colombia. Also, you could see us on our website, www.legacy-group.co. And then you could get all of our details. You want to send me a note on LinkedIn, send me a note on email. All the details are on either one of those sites.
Well, Cole, we wish you the best with your business. Thank you so much for coming in, sharing your story. To our listeners, yeah, go look up Legacy Group and follow their journey as they make green coffee an even bigger and bolder company and brand in the world. And again, to our listeners, always keep your eye on the future and always be disruptive. Bye, everyone.
49 faces looked to him in triumph. Over the last 12 months, they had each taken turns and promoted his business for a week at a time, driving over $987,342 in revenue. What if you had a network of 50 centers of influence who promoted your business every week for a year? Grab your copy of the number one Amazon best-selling book, The Ultimate Guide to Growing Your Business with a Podcast, at 33% off the Amazon price by going to ultimatepodcastbook.com. Again, that website for 33% off the Amazon price is ultimatepodcastbook.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.